So tonight's talk is entitled 24 Hours That Changed My Life. You might from that title get the impression that maybe I was in advertising at one point. And I was. So the idea is, you know, you put the title, get the hook in the title, and then people will come. I want to give you just a little bit of background into my own family life, how I grew up. My parents were very good Catholics. We went to church every Sunday. We observed the fasting during Lent. We were us kids really understood the rules about being Catholic. We went to Catholic school. I went the longest. I was the oldest. But we weren't the kind of family that had family rosaries or devotions. Except for my mom praying the rosary, I never saw my parents pray, although I know they were very faith-filled. But it was a very private thing for them. And they wouldn't even know what having a personal relationship with Jesus meant. They were very much pre-Vatican II. Again, I'm not saying that to take away at all from their faithfulness. They were very, very faithful. But the takeaway for me was I didn't have, even after many years of Catholic school and living in a family where our faith was really an integral part of our life, I didn't have any connection with Jesus into my adult life. However, God is so good. I did have this amazing connection to the Blessed Mother. So I think I saw the movie, many of you might have seen it. It's The Song of Bernadette, the original, black and white. It's really old. I just looked it up. It came out in 1943. I was not around in 1943, but I saw it probably in the 60s, right around the time that I made my first Holy Communion. And the wonderful thing about that movie was, now, it wouldn't hold a candle to the way they make movies today, but the way they portrayed the Blessed Mother coming to Bernadette. So I don't know if you remember it, but she came in a bubble, and she just sort of floated. This bubble would float, and then it would stop where Bernadette was, and then Mary would appear inside the bubble, and she would speak to Bernadette. Well, you know, I was 7. I believed that this is how it worked. So I can remember walking home from school when I was in second and third grade. And I loved the Blessed Mother. I used to talk to her all the time. And I was short at that point, and I would be walking along, and people had their hedges all along the front of their house. And I can remember looking over the hedges, just waiting to see if the bubble would come, because I really wanted Mary to come and Mary to talk to me. So I didn't necessarily wait for the bubble. I talked to her all the time. That same year when I made my first Holy Communion, my grandmother gave me a statue of Mary, which I still have, and that was on my dresser. So in our family, the first thing my mother said when we walked in the door after school was, get out of your uniform. Like, we had one uniform and several blouses, and we were not going to play in our uniform. So I'd remember always going up to my room, changing out of my uniform. Mary was on my dresser, and I would just be talking to her about my day. So we were like this, Mary and I. We were good, tight friends. After I graduated from college, now in college, I'm what I would call today, I think I would call myself like a cultural Catholic. I knew the rules, I knew the seasons, and I was playing by all the rules, right? Because this is what you do when you're Catholic. When I went to college, I was still going to Mass every Sunday. I went to a very small girls' school in Massachusetts. Massachusetts is a very Catholic state, or at least it was back in the 70s. The Catholic Church was right across the street from campus. So, you know, I just did what I always did. I went to Mass like I always did. It wasn't until I graduated from college that my life changed significantly. So I graduated from college and I had a couple of jobs until I found the job that I loved. I got a job in advertising. I worked for Ogilvy & Mather, which is a New York agency. But I got the job in Atlanta, Georgia, because I wanted to live someplace warm. That was my goal. You can see how God has a sense of humor even now. So I moved to Georgia, and I started working at Ogilvy, and I loved it. I loved it. At the same time, I went back to school at night, and I took a second job working at Talbot's. I also loved fashion, as you can see. So my life got incredibly busy very quickly. And when that happened, I have to say some of those rules that I had lived by for so long, some of them started to fall by the wayside. So I do remember the first time I didn't go to Mass on Sunday. And I remember thinking, I was on my way, I actually had a shift at Talbot's, and I remember thinking, I could be struck by lightning. Like, this was a mortal sin, and I knew it. But I also knew that there was nothing drawing me to Mass. For whatever reason, other than the fact that it was a rule, I wasn't impelled to go. And at that point, none of my friends were Catholic. I was living in the Bible Belt. Most of my friends, if they were anything, were Baptists. So that day passed, and after that, it got easier and easier to just write off Mass. If I was busy, if I had another shift, if we were working at the agency, sometimes we worked weekends. It became a very common thing for me to not go to Mass until it came to a point where I wasn't going to Mass at all. Now, here's the weird thing. I still had that statue of Mary. She's moved with me every time I've moved, and I've moved a heck of a lot of times. She was always on my dresser, and I always talked to her. I wouldn't necessarily call it praying, although I did pray three Hail Marys every time I needed a parking spot at the mall. But my relationship with Mary went beyond what I would call that formal prayer. It was really a relationship of a mom to me. So she was always in the mix in my life, although Jesus was really not in the mix at all, sad to say. Okay, we're going to fast forward ahead to my 30s. So by the time I'm in my 30s, I am hitting all my goals. I'm really a goal-driven person. So when I graduated from college, I had goals for myself. Simple ones at first, you know, get my own apartment, get a car. I got a Chevette, stunning car. Got my first job, moved away. I met all these goals. And then as I became more successful in my work at the agency, I started having new goals. And luckily, in the 80s in advertising, it was a really lucrative time. And if you worked hard, you could play hard, and you could make a lot of money. And that sort of became my goal. How much could I make? How much more could I make? What could I do with that? So I went from having an apartment with roommates to having my own apartment to having a house. I went from having a Chevette to having an Audi to having a 360 SL Mercedes convertible. These are my goals. $100 haircuts, that was the norm. Getting my nails done every week, that was on my schedule. That was what my life was. Okay, so here's where God interjects. Here's where we get to the dramatic moment. And I'll preface this by saying, I grew up in the Northeast. My parents at this point, my dad's company in New York City, transferred their headquarters to Atlanta. So my parents had just moved to Atlanta as well. And they were not quite aware of this new life I was living in terms of not going to Mass. So this was a bit of a revelation to them. And I have to say, they weren't very happy about it. Okay, so I'm in Atlanta. I'm in my early 30s. I'm thinking I'm on top of the world. And then in 1 week, two things happen that pretty much shake the foundations, which were built on sand, of my life at that point. First of all, I was in a relationship that I thought was going to last pretty much for forever, and it crumbled very quickly, and to me in a way that I was not expecting it to happen. And you're in your 30s. This is when you're thinking, okay, this is what I want. I want a relationship, I want to have a family, whatever. So that happened at the same time, same week, at the agency I was working in, our biggest client, which I can tell you now because it doesn't matter, it was years ago, Shoney's. I don't know if you've ever been down south, but Shoney's is a huge chain. We were their agency of record, and they notified us that they were going to open up their account to look for a new agency. The majority of the people in my agency worked on that account. Very similar to a law firm, every minute that you work at an agency, you bill to a client. So when the client goes away, so did the people who work on that. Unless you get a new client very quickly, there's some downtime where people get laid off. And that's very common in the industry. People hop from one agency to another. But it was a little disconcerting for me to have these two things in my life that I'd kind of built my world around at that point, both looking kind of shaky, to say the least. Now, the wonderful thing about this was I couldn't control either one of these. See, God had me in such a great place. I like to fix things and move on. Let's get the problem fixed. Well, you can't make someone love you, and I could not change the mind of our biggest client. So God had this great opportunity to interject where I was absolutely panicked. Okay, so here's how it happened. My mom and dad called me one Saturday night and said, "What are you doing tomorrow? You want to come over for dinner in the afternoon?" Now, that was a little bit tricky because my dad used to like test the waters when I'd go over and say things like, "So, what was the homily like at Mass today?" And it was obvious to him I wasn't going to Mass. I didn't lie about it. I would just change the subject or go help my mom in the kitchen or something. And so I wasn't sure if I really wanted to go this particular day. I thought, I don't want to have an argument with my dad. But so I said, "Yeah, okay, that's fine. I'll come by." So I walked into the kitchen, and there was, right by the kitchen door, there was a little, like, desk with a phone on it. And on that little desk area, I saw this book. I'm a huge reader. I read everything I can find. I see this book. I don't know if any of you have ever seen this book. It's about the Blessed Mother appearing in Medjugorje, which is what used to be Yugoslavia, and she's been appearing there since 1981. It's not an approved apparition. You don't have to believe it, but there's a lot of good fruit that's come from it. But what attracted me, I didn't know Medjugorje's Medjugorje. I didn't know where that was, but this picture really attracted me, and the first thing I thought of was, oh my gosh, that's Mary. I didn't know anything about this book or this author or anything, but I just was like a magnet drawn to the book, and I thought, oh my gosh, that's Mary, but how can this be? When Mary lived, there were no cameras. Now there are cameras, and Mary isn't living. How do you get a photo of Mary? So I was really preoccupied by that, but I thought, I cannot broach this question, because that's religion, and that will bring it all back around to my Mass situation. So I didn't say a word about the book. And we had a nice dinner. It was fine. Good conversation. And Sunday evening, after I helped my mom clean up, I was getting in my red Mercedes convertible in the driveway. And my mom came running out of the garage, and she had this in her hand. And she's like, wait. So I stopped the car, rolled down my window, and I said, "Mom, what's going on?" She goes, "Listen, your godmother sent me this book, and I don't have time to read it. So I was wondering, would you read it and tell me if it's any good?" Oh, what a ploy, right? But I was so fascinated by this, I couldn't say no. I'm like, yeah, very casually. "Oh, yeah, I'll read it." And I took it and I threw it in the back seat. I'm like, "Yeah, sure, no problem. I'll call you when I'm done." Well, I couldn't wait to get home. I got home that night. Now, dealing with both my personal situation and my work situation had gotten me to the point where I really wasn't sleeping well, because I just kept going around and around in my mind, you know, I got to get my resume ready in case I got to move, in case I lose my job, what am I going to do about the house payments, my mortgage, you know, all these things that hit you about 2 o'clock in the morning. So I thought, what the heck, I'm not sleeping anyway, I'm going to read this book. I got into bed and I started this book about 9:30, and I read the whole book by 1 a.m. Like, I didn't stop for anything. I did not even get out of bed to go to the bathroom. That's a record for me. Read the whole book in that short time, and I couldn't believe it. Like, I wanted to get on the phone and start calling people. "Do you know Mary's appearing? Mary, the Blessed Mother, she's appearing. She's talking to people. She's giving messages. This is amazing." So, you know, I'm trying to resolve this with this Mary, who I love, and she's appearing, and I got to get to Medjugorje. Like, that's my first thought. It's 2 o'clock in the morning at this point, so I'm not thinking clearly. But I eventually fall asleep, and here's where God does this amazing thing. So I fall asleep, and I have this dream. And in the dream, I am sitting on a fence, and there's nothing around me but pasture land. Now, the funny thing about this is I'm a city person. I was born in New York City. I've lived in big cities my whole life. I don't know about sitting in the pasture on a fence. This is so out of character for me. But I'm sitting on this fence, so I'm a little bit taller. Nothing to see but this beautiful, beautiful green grass. It's a sunny day. It's just beautiful. And I remember thinking to myself, I don't want to wake up. This is so peaceful. I just want to stay here because my life is so stressful right now. So in the distance, while I'm thinking that, I see a figure walking back and forth. And I'm thinking to myself, well, that's curious, but I don't know this person, whoever that is. And then, you know, in dreams, things happen sort of sometimes out of the normal realm of time. So I remember I looked up again, and this person was coming right towards me, and I remember just looking at the person, and I said, are you looking for something? And this voice said, no, I found you. And he put his arms out like this, and I just thought, okay. And I was so attracted to these eyes and this face, and I just went, oh, okay. And I went to jump off the fence to go, and he just went dazzlingly white. And I remember, at this point, I woke up, and I remember thinking, I don't want to move. I don't want to lose what that was. That was such an encounter. So I stayed in bed for a few minutes, and I just kept thinking to myself, I think that was Jesus. I think that was Jesus. And my next thought was, why is he looking for me? Why is he looking for me? Me, out of all the people he could be possibly be searching for, why me? I'm not going to Mass. I'm not a good Catholic. Why is he looking for me? And I got a little bit panicked. This is part of my personality. So I got up and I thought, okay, I just have to sort this out. Was that really Jesus or was it not Jesus? At this point, it's about 5 o'clock in the morning and there's no going back to sleep. So I get up, I take a shower, I get dressed. My antidote for all things that make me stressed out, go to work. I get in my car, it's about 6 o'clock in the morning, and I'm thinking, okay, I'm just going to go to work. I'm going to go to the office, I'm going to start working, and take my mind off this. I can't even wrap my head around what just happened. It was just earth-shattering to me. So, you know, there's not really any people on the road at this hour. I lived right in the heart of Atlanta, so I didn't even have to get on the highway to go to work. I just had to go down Peachtree. And I was at a red light at this corner, and I looked over, and this is the way I went to work for years, and there's a huge church there. I've always known that. It was the cathedral, the Catholic cathedral, which happened to be called Christ the King, by the way. So I look at it, and this crazy impulse, I pulled the car over, and I parked in front of it. And I thought, okay, if I really want to know if that was Jesus, I should just go ask him. This is so out of character for me at this point. But I'm probably sleep deprived and everything else. But I'm thinking, I've got to have an answer. This was so powerful, this dream and this experience. I had to know. So I parked the car, and there are steep stairs going up to the front doors. I'm walking up the stairs, and as I'm walking up the stairs, it's all stained glass windows. It's an old kind of Gothic church, stained glass windows all the way down both sides, and I see the lights going on because I see the stained glass windows being illuminated all the way down. And by the time I get to the front door, the janitor's unlocking it. So I said to the janitor, "Can I come in?" And he said, "Yes, Mass is at 6:20, 6:15." And I said, "Oh," I'm thinking to myself, "Well, I'm not here for Mass, but sure, I'll come in." So I went in and I sat in the very last pew. Now the cathedral holds 700 people, and it's the old-fashioned, you know, layout. So it's just two long rows and the altar. I'm in the very, very, very last pew at the back. There's also a door on the side up closer, and I hear, I'm just sitting there staring at the altar saying, "Jesus, was that you? Jesus, was that you?" Like, I don't know what to do with this. Then I start to hear other people are coming in, and sure enough, you know, Mass is about to start. So I stay in the back, and there's, you know, 10 grandmas in the front two pews, and they're taking their usual spots, and Mass starts. The priest comes out. I'm so far behind in the back that, you know, the priest looks like he's this big, but I haven't gotten an answer, so I stay. And, I'm just asking over and over and over, "Jesus, was that you? Just tell me if that was you." So I'm in the very back, and I'm thinking, I'm so glad no one's behind me, because I feel like I need to sort of participate in Mass, at least stand and sit and kneel when everybody else does, and I'm not sure if I'm even going to remember how to do that. So, but it all comes back to you. So I'm sitting back there, and I'm kneeling down at the consecration, and the priest lifts up the host, and I happen to look up, and I don't know if it was the light, I don't know what it was, but I look up, and at one instant, the host just sort of catches a light, and it's dazzlingly white. And I felt like that was my answer, that it was Jesus in my dream and on the altar. So at that point, I lose it in the back pew. Again, nobody can hear me or see me. I'm so far in the back, and I just start crying. I'm just thinking, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. It was you. So Mass ends, everybody leaves. I'm trying to pull myself together in the back. See, the great thing about religious life is you don't wear makeup. I had on full makeup for the day, and I had, you know, mascara streaming down my face, and I looked like a disaster area, so I go to the ladies' room at the cathedral and pull myself together, and I go to work. And I still don't know what to do with this. Like, I'm not about to change my whole life. I just want to know why Jesus was looking for me and what I'm supposed to do next. Like, I'm very practical. This is where I'm at. So that night, I go home and I'm thinking to myself, all right, I actually had a very good day that day. And I remember thinking, okay, if I wake up, I have to say this, one more thing I have to tell you. I did not receive communion. I was enough of a Catholic to know that I had been away for so long, I hadn't received confession in quite a few years. I did not receive the Eucharist that day. I knew that would have been wrong. So, but I'm home that night, and I'm working on my resume. I've got to get some things straightened out in terms of looking for another job in case I lose my job. And I thought to myself, but you know, today was such a peaceful day. It was a good day. If I wake up in time, I would do that again. I would go to that Mass and just sit there because that I had such a good day. It had to be because of that. So, you know, this is God. He's with such a sense of humor, and he's so patient with us. I became a daily Mass goer who didn't receive communion. And I had my own special spot in the back, and I don't think anybody even noticed I was there. But I did that for quite a bit of time, like months. I did that. And you might say, well, why didn't you just go to confession? And I would tell you, because I was terrified, because I hadn't been in so long. And I happened to pick up a bulletin at one point and notice that they had this new thing since I'd been going called face-to-face confession, which just really put the fear of God in me. I thought, there is no way I'm going to face-to-face confession with 10 years worth of sin. I just can't do it. So I eventually, after about 6 months, I get to the point where I see how ridiculous my own state is, and I decide I really need to go to confession. But I need to scope it out, because I like to have a plan. I like to know what I'm getting into. So one Saturday afternoon, I go with the objective of just scoping out confession. Not going, but just watching. And I notice that, yes, there are reconciliation rooms to the sides, but there is also a good old-fashioned red velvet curtain and a door in the middle, confessionals in the back of the cathedral. And yes, priests go in those. And you can go the old-fashioned way. So I thought, okay, that's what I needed to know. I'm going to do this. Every night that week, when I got home from work, I had a yellow legal pad on my desk in my living room, and I started as early as I could remember in terms of the last time I'd been to confession, and I went year by year writing down my sins. Talk about a very humbling experience. I had pages. Okay, now here's a piece of information you're going to need to know for this story to make sense. It was a yellow legal pad, and I wrote with a black felt tip marker. And I'm gearing up for Saturday. Saturday, I get there more than a half an hour early because the deal is I've got to be first or I can't do it. Like, I got to get in there and do it. If I've got to wait for a lot of people, I'm going to lose my nerve completely. I get there very early, and I'm like number one in line at the back of the church for the confessional. Sure enough, the priests come out, 4 o'clock, I go in, and it had been such a long time since I'd been in a confessional that I actually forgot sort of the layout. And I had my pad. And the poor people behind me must have thought, I do not want to be in line behind her. She's taking a pad in with her. Like, how long is she going to be in there? I get in there, and the first thing that I'm sort of stunned by is the fact that it's dark. I can't see a thing. It's pitch black. And I have this whole pad. And I have spent all week really searching my conscience to make a good confession. So I start to panic. And the priest, I hear the window, the wooden window slide open, and I see his profile. And I start, bless me, Father, for I've sinned. It's been 10 years since my last confession. And, it was the humility of admitting it was 10 years and the fact that I'm totally stunned by the fact that I don't know what to do next because I can't read anything. I started to cry. And, it's one of these, and Father's like, oh, now. He was Irish. I think he's a saint, but he's passed away since. But he says, oh, now just settle down. Take it easy. We're going to take it nice and slow. Okay. So, I said, I'm just so upset that it's been 10 years. And he goes, oh, 10 years. It's but the blink of an eye in God's time. But that was so nice that it just made me cry harder. Like, how could you be nice to me? This is, like, I need to be punished for all these things. How come you're being so nice? So I start to cry really hard at this point. And there's a lot of silence on the other side. And he's going, all right, now you're ready to begin. And I'm still crying. So finally I'm like, okay, Father, the problem is, and I start rifling through my pad, which now has tears on it. I didn't bring tissues. I didn't expect to have a crying jag in there. There's tears. What I can see as I tilt it up, because he has a light bulb in his side, as I tilt it up towards the screen, I can make out some of it, but now it's all smeared. And I'm flipping pages madly, trying to find a page that's not smeared. And I said, Father, I have this whole pad full of sins, and I can't read them. Is there a way that I could get a light on in here? And he's like, oh, no. So, he says, well, just tell me the sins you remember. And like, and I said, okay, but I wanted to make a really good confession. Like, I wanted this to be it. I wanted to get everything off my soul. I really wanted to make a good confession. He goes, oh, you'll make a good confession. Just tell me what you remember. So I could remember a good amount, but I knew it wasn't all of it. He was very kind, and I got everything out, and I was disappointed, and I kept saying, but there's more. If I could just read my notes, I know there's more. And he said, well, here's the question. Are you sorry for them? And I started to cry, and I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so, so sorry. And he goes, well, then you're forgiven. And he does absolution, and I'm stunned. Like, this was way too easy, and then he gave me a penance, and I'm gripping there's this little shelf, and I'm gripping. I'm like, okay, this is it. Like, sackcloth and ashes, and walk around the church in sackcloth and ashes. Okay, I could do it. And he gave me a penance that seemed not good enough for all that I had just confessed. And he was probably just dying to get me out of there at this point. But I said, oh, Father, do you want to give me anything else? And he's like, no, I think that'll be just fine. Are you sorry? I'm like, I'm so sorry. Are you sure I shouldn't do more? And he's like, no, that's all I want you to do. And then he said, you can go. God bless you. I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. I was shaking when I came out of there. And I remember walking down the cathedral steps, and I felt like I had just been 100 pounds just lifted off my shoulders. I just felt phenomenal. And I couldn't believe that I had waited so long to do this wonderful thing where I encountered the mercy of God through Monsignor Kinney, that was his name. So that was the beginning, that experience of the dream and becoming a daily Mass goer who didn't receive communion to going to confession and going to Mass. That was the beginning of my reconversion back to my faith. And it was a reconversion that introduced me to the person of Jesus, who I had never really met before until I was an adult in the midst of this really stressful time in my life. Now, here's what happens in the midst of all this. I put my house up for sale and it sells. Like that. I thought it was going to be a long, drawn-out process. It sells. And I've got my resume and I'm going out to other agencies. Atlanta is not a big town like New York City. So if you're looking for a job, you know, you have a few choices. And I was at this one agency and I'm not bragging, I was good at what I did. I knew how to do it well, and this guy was looking for somebody who knew how to do what I did. And basically he said to me, name your price. That never happens, at least in advertising. I don't know if it happens in other jobs, but it never happens in advertising. And I was stunned. And basically I doubled my salary from what I had been making at the other agency. And I hadn't lost my job yet. But this was God, just so all over this whole thing. So I have this huge life change, and when I sell my house, I decide to live more simply. That was just a grace. I wasn't thinking of this. This comes much later. I was just thinking I needed to really simplify my life. And I sold my house. I actually sold the car. Just decided I was going to live more within my means. And I began tithing, which I had never, ever done in my life, other than the dollar bill my dad would give us, all of us girls, when we went to Mass on Sunday as a family. I had never put things in any money in the basket on my own. Okay, so that's the end of Act 1. All right. In the course of coming back to my faith and encountering Jesus, I was on fire. And so the first thing I'm thinking of is, what can I do? I'll join the Rosary group. I already love Mary. That's it. I joined the Rosary group. I was the youngest by far. The Rosary group was mostly women in their 60s and 70s who were delighted that I showed up, by the way. And then another good friend of mine that I was at this new agency that I had started at, she happened to be Catholic, and she also had a devotion to Mary. And so I told her I was going to this Rosary group, and she said, oh, I'll join you. So that was lovely to at least have two of us there. I joined the Rosary group, and then we both saw this announcement in the bulletin that they had this prayer group on Thursday nights. So we went. Now, what we didn't know was that these were all the people who'd been through a Life in the Spirit seminar. And so this was what happened after the Life in the Spirit seminar. We didn't know that. So my first night, there's great music that attracted me. I was so happy to be there. I loved the music. And then people started speaking in tongues. And I was just sort of fascinated. I had no idea what was happening. I thought maybe people from other countries. I just had no concept of what was going on. But there was a great talk, and we just kept going. I didn't get baptized in the Holy Spirit for another year, but I became part of this charismatic prayer group, and what attracted me was the fact that these people were saying they heard from the Lord. Like, that never happened in my house. Like, my dad never said, well, when I was praying, Jesus said blah, blah, blah to me. No. It's so outside of my experience. But I would come to this prayer group, and people would say, well, I really feel like the Lord said this, or I really feel like the Lord wants me to do this. And I'm thinking, however that happens, I want that. I want that. Because I don't have that, and that looks really good. And your life looks a whole lot more together than my life, so that's important to me. So I became very active in the church, and I started to see areas in my own life where I was sort of living a double life. My work at the agency at that point included a cigarette account, a condom account, and these were things that I was, I really didn't want to be working on these things and spending all of my day investing in things that I thought were really actually against my own moral code, not to mention what our faith teaches. So I was praying one morning. I had gotten into the habit of getting up early, praying, and then going to the early mass and going to work, and I was praying one morning, and I felt like the Lord said to me, quit your job. And I thought, that is so crazy. That wasn't Jesus. And I got up and I went to Mass and I went to work and I totally forgot about it. And the next morning I sat down, having totally forgotten about the day before, and before I could do anything, open my prayer book, my Bible, anything, I heard that same voice say, quit your job. And I was really sobered by that. But I was like, I can't do that. And so I had a nice conversation with Jesus, telling him why that was not possible. I was single, and I needed to be able to provide for myself, and I really couldn't quit my job. Okay, and then I went to Mass. The third day, Jesus said the same thing, and I was really stricken. I was scared. So I went to work, and I called one of the ladies from that prayer group. And I said, Carrie, I felt like maybe the last couple of days, Jesus has asked me to quit my job, and I'm afraid to do it. Could you pray about it and call me back tomorrow morning by 9? I was just so on a schedule, like I've got to know, that I really put a lot of parameters around when Jesus was going to speak to her. So, but she was so kind, and she's like, well, I'll pray, and if I hear anything, I will call you. Okay, and I called this other woman, who is my good friend, and I asked her the same question. I said, and could you call me back tomorrow morning by 9? And she's like, okay, yeah, I'll call you if I hear anything. So the next day, I'm at my office, and the phone rings, and it's Carrie, the leader of the prayer group, and you know, I'm all over the phone, like, Carrie, what did he say? What did he say? What did you hear? And she said, well, Marianne, all I really heard when I prayed for you was the Lord say, trust me. And I just was so disappointed, because I knew that was the problem. I really didn't trust him enough to do this. And I'm like, Carrie, nothing else? Like, that's all? And she said, that's what he said. And I said, okay, thanks. And I hung up the phone, and I was really disappointed, because I knew I couldn't do it on that. So a few minutes later, my other friend Kelsey calls, and I'm like, bated breath, Kelsey, what did he say? And she said, well, I felt like when I prayed for you, I felt like the Lord said to tell you that he will provide. And I'm like, oh, now we're getting somewhere. Okay, did he say he's going to provide, like, a husband, a winning lottery ticket, another job? Like, what should I be waiting for? And she said, he didn't give any details. He just said he will provide. And I said, okay. And I was disappointed, because I knew myself, and I knew that I'm like a concrete, have a plan, do the plan person, and I can't step out into nothingness, even in this relationship with Jesus, without a plan. So, day goes on. That afternoon, I'm working in my office, and this woman that I worked with, who was hilarious, and she was all on fire for Jesus. She was a few years younger than me, and she'd just gotten baptized in the Presbyterian church. And she used to come into my room, my office, all the time and talk about God. And she walked by my door, and she did it like a double take. And she goes, hey, I was praying for you last night, and God gave me a word for you. And I just look up. I'm like, mm-hmm. I'm thinking it's going to be just trust me or something. And I said, yeah. And she said, yeah, it was in Matthew. It was, you cannot serve both God and mammon. And I dropped everything I was doing. I dropped it on my desk, and I went, oh, my gosh, Lisa, that's it. And she goes, what? It's Matthew. And I'm like, oh, I know. That is what I needed to hear. So I sat down, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, this is amazing. I start typing. She goes, what are you doing? And I said, I'm typing out my letter of resignation. She went, oh, my gosh, don't quit your job on that. Oh, my gosh, can't believe it. But I just felt like that was it. It just pierced my heart. It was God's word. It was direction. It was telling, you can't do this. You can't keep one foot here and one foot in my world with me, Marianne. You've got to make the choice. So I typed up my letter of resignation, and I was so excited. Like, God asked me to do something, and I'm doing it. Probably for the first time in my life, I got a word from God, and I'm acting on it, and it matters. So I put the letter on my boss's desk. He's the CFO, and he wasn't there that day. I left it on his desk, and I went home, and I'm, like, walking on air. Like, I've done it. I did it. God, you asked me to do it, and I've done it. This is awesome. I'm not thinking about anything else. Next day, I get up. I pray, go to Mass, get to work. I'm always the first one in because it's so doggone early. Our offices had glass walls, right? So there's really no privacy, although you could shut your door and speak on the phone, but you could see everything in the whole place. I got off the elevator, my office was down the end of the hall, and I could see my light was on at my desk, and I'm thinking, that's funny, I never leave my light on. I'm walking down the hall, and I see, oh, my boss is sitting at my desk. So I walk in, and he's at the desk, and I'm across from him, and I'm not quite sure what this is about. I said, hi, Tom, and he holds up the letter, you know, that I had left him the night before, and he goes, what is this? And I said, oh, that's my letter of resignation. And he slams it on the desk and he goes, I can read. I can read. And at this point, I'm shaky. I'm a little bit nervous. And so I don't say anything. And he says, what is it? What is it that you want? More money? And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I could get a raise. But that was, I knew that was really not what God had in store for me. And I said, no, it's not the money at all. And he went through a whole list of things. Is it your staff? Do you need more people? More vacation time? New equipment? Just tell us what it is and we'll do it. And I'm saying, no, it's that, no, I love this place. It's a great place to work. And then he looks at me and he gets very serious and he said, did you take another job? Now, this is a big deal because you sign this non-compete clause when you work, I don't know if they still do this, but you did because, you know, it's all top secret what you're working on for these clients and they don't want you jumping from one agency to another and taking all those big secrets with you. They're really not big secrets, but they make a big deal out of that, and I had signed the non-compete clause saying I wouldn't jump from one to the other without, you usually have to take off 90 days where you don't work from one agency to the next. And so he said, you know, did you, you signed with another agency? And I said, no, I would never do that. I did not do that. So he was really getting frustrated, and he said in a very loud voice, then just tell me why the blank you did this. And I was so caught off guard, and I hadn't prepared for this encounter, and I just said the truth. I said, I did it because God asked me to. And then there was dead silence, and we both just looked at each other like, did I say that? And he's thinking, did you say that? One thing you never talk about, at least in advertising agencies, is God, Jesus, your faith, totally off limits. So I had just stepped over all kinds of boundaries making that statement, and we just stared at each other, and finally he said, you know, in 30 years of being in this business, that's the best answer I've ever heard for somebody quitting their job. And I almost fainted with relief because I thought the other alternative was he was going to call security and have them take me out because I was a mad woman. But he really, I didn't know this, but he was a deacon in the Baptist church for years and years and years. So he had a very solid relationship with the Lord, but because we never spoke about faith, neither one of us knew, either one of us had it. So, at that point, he said, why don't you sit down? And I sat down and he said, okay, here's what I'm going to do. If you'll stay until we hire someone to take your place, I'll make sure you get everything. Your full severance package, everything. You know, I had only been there a couple years. He goes, I'll make sure you're like tendered. You'll get your tenure, you'll be in. And I'll give you a $10,000 bonus because they need you here and I want you to train the next person. Will you stay until that happens? And I really felt in good conscience that I could. I had quit, and I didn't want to leave them in the lurch. It would definitely be more than a two-week notice, but of course, I'll stay. I liked the job. So I stayed. The Wednesday before Thanksgiving was my last day, and Tom was true to his word, gave me everything he promised, and then I had nothing to do. So I start praying. And, you know, the church hired me to do some stuff, but you know how it is with the church. You hardly can pay your rent on what the church pays you to do part-time work. So I really needed a way to support myself. I did a little bit of freelance work, but I really started praying full-time. So my apartment was very close to the cathedral, and they just started perpetual adoration. So I became an adorer early Saturday mornings, but I was there every afternoon just saying to the Lord, what is it? What do I do now? I need some help here. And all I kept hearing was the Lord saying, I want you for myself. I'm like, okay, you've got me. I don't even have a job. But what are we doing? What happens now? And so I managed to piece together some work here and there, and it took like another full year before the Lord really spoke to my heart in a way that revealed that perhaps it was a vocation. And that was very unlikely because I was older. I was, you know, most communities say up to 35, and I was already past 35. And so, I really, I I didn't put much stock in it, but I thought, okay, I'll just stick my foot into that water and see what happens. So I did that. I went to a community, and for lots of reasons, it just wasn't a good fit for me. I went to visit on a weekend, and one Sunday night, I was cleaning up at the church after a seminar, and the priest, young priest, who I knew very well, came up to me and said, "What are you doing about your vocation?" Now, I had said this to no one. And I said, "Oh, I don't have a vocation." And he said, "Yes, you do." And I said, "No, I don't." And he said, "Yes, you do." And I said, "No, I don't." And he said, "Why are you so upset about it?" And I said, "Well, I went to visit one place and it wasn't right. I'm sure I don't have a vocation." And he said, "Oh, please. What are you looking for?" And I said, "I'm looking for a place where people know Jesus, where they hear him, like in our charismatic prayer group." And he said, "Oh, well, you need a charismatic community." And I went, "Oh, they have those?" And he said, "Yes. See, I thought all sisters heard Jesus and talked about it." But that's not exactly the way the community sometimes can be perceived by an outsider who's visiting. So he said, "Here, I've got the name of two communities. Promise me you'll call them and at least see what happens." And I said, "I promise." So I called both of them and I thought, "Oh, this is good. There's two. One of them is going to work out and one of them will say, 'No, you can't come,' and then I'll know." And they both said, "Come. Come and visit." And I went, "Okay, God, so I'm going to go, and then one of them's going to say you're too old, and one of them's going to say you're not, and that'll be it." I went to the first one in Texas, and it was beautiful. It was in a desert, and I just kept saying, "If this is it, tell me." Nothing. Second community was in Michigan, and the very first night I was there, I was in the chapel, and the Lord right away said, all the sisters had gone to bed, and the Lord right away when I sat down in the chapel said, "Your heart has come home." I was like, "Oh my gosh, this is awesome. Okay, so I'm ready to move, right? This is it. God spoke to me. He told me I'm ready. Ready to go." So at the end of that weekend, Sister Ann very nicely says, "How was your weekend?" I said, "Oh, it was good. Yeah, I think this is it." This is not how discernment works, by the way. So she was very kind. You know, she said, "Oh, that's lovely. So, you know, we'll call you." And I'm like, "Okay, yeah, call me anytime. I'll be ready. This is it." She's like, "Well, we'll sort of like, don't call us, we'll call you." And no, she said that because they were going on a mission trip to Africa. They were not even going to be around the sisters who would have been in contact with me. But I didn't know that. And so I'm thinking, okay, I'm ready. Time's wasting. I'm getting older by the second. Let me join. Anyway, it all worked out, and I went back for a week with the sisters in August when they were on retreat. And on August 15th, a Marian feast day, which was no accident in my mind, the sisters invited me to come and join them. So I went home, and I had about a month to pull some things together and get out of my lease and all kinds of stuff. Now, here's the beautiful thing. The week that I left, I had to go to the bank and clean out my bank account. I had my balance in my bank account at that point was like $60. And as I was closing out my bank account and leaving the bank, I remembered two things the Lord had said to my two friends when I called. "If you trust me, I will provide." He provided almost to the penny what I needed to live on from the moment I quit my job until the moment I left to move to Michigan. That's how good God is. If you trust him, he will provide. Amen.